Welcome to the Wine Atelier Podcast, your insider's guide to mastering wine with certified sommelier Stephanie Miskew. Hey there, wine lovers. Welcome to the Wine Atelier Podcast, and thanks so much for tuning in today. And on this second week of Rosé Month, I'm very excited to be bringing you another special guest who's pretty much responsible for my love of rosé wine, and maybe yours too. I don't know. We'll see. And I have with me today Paul Chevalier, National Fine Wine Director for Shaw Ross Imports. Thanks so much for joining me today, Paul.
Well, happy to be here.
I know how busy you are disseminating the good word about rosé, so again, I really appreciate you taking the time.
No, of course. The season has begun.
Right? Hasn't it? I know. I wanted to do this in May. So like everybody is ready to go when summer hits. Like they know which wines they're looking for. And I have to clarify for everybody. So for those of you listening, you might not be familiar with the name Shaw Ross Imports, but I bet you've heard of a little wine that Paul is very involved with from the Chateau d'Esclandre estate. He's responsible for a Whispering Angel Rosé that I know many of you are familiar with, and I'm very excited to have him here to talk about those wines as well as kind of the state of rosé today. Because as we were just talking about before I started recording, I've known Paul, 2010, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Kind of how time flies.
It really does. And I remember talking about back then, and rosé wasn't really the thing then, but you guys were determined to just, you know, to make it, to bring it to the people here in the United States. We're so glad you have. And I'm just going to start off by asking, like, why do you think rosé is and continues to be so incredibly hot today?
Well, I think, you know, if we look back and remember this, the story of Chateau d'Esclandre goes back to 2006, which was the first vintage. And it's safe to say, you know, 10, 12 years ago, there were very few people in America that were drinking rosé. So the challenge was, how do you introduce Americans to rosé, which was not something new from France. In France, rosé specifically in Provence, you know, goes back many, many years. But the whole idea was light in color and dry, which means zero sugar. So that was the real message that we tried to get across from the beginning, why Whispering Angel was so different to most other rosés that the average American would have experienced.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I remember that the first time I went to where we did an event together, that was a very, very prominent part of your message was no sugar, right? No sugar. And actually, if you want to kind of just right off the bat, kind of tell people the differentiation between Provençal style rosé, which is what you're all about, and say your, you know, your blush or white Zinfandel wines.
Oh, sure. Well, again, you remember, is rosé, rosé are produced from red grapes. And the reality is you can make rosé pretty much from any red grape. The challenge is the red grapes, which are used to make red wine, generally speaking, the heavier styles, for example, maybe Cabernet Sauvignon or Sangiovese, tend to have slightly thicker skins, and they produce these heavier styles of rosé. And I think this is one of the probably big differences, because mm-hmm. in Provence, the predominant grape is Grenache, and the style of rosés produced from this Grenache are the ones which are lighter, not heavy, not astringent, not bitter. And of course, dry, which means zero sugar. It is illegal. I think this is important. Is the appellation, which is Côte de Provence, mm-hmm. it is illegal. So it's against the law to produce sweet rosé in Provence. So all Provence rosés are literally dry, which means less than 2 grams of sugar.
Absolutely. Right. Very, very important. And the rosés you produce are pretty much, the grapes are grown to produce those rosés. And I know, right, some of the white Zinfandel and other wines here that are, you know, have a little more sugar are kind of byproducts of making other wine as well.
Yeah. And again, it's a lot of historical reasons. Remember, in America, wine consumption has changed enormously from, you know, from the 60s into the 70s. And you sort of had people started drinking Chardonnay. And of course, and then the blush wines on a little bit on the sweeter side. And then more recently, perhaps, Pinot Grigio or Sauvignon Blanc. So it's been a whole evolution over the past, you know, 20 to 30 years. Rosé in France, in Provence, as I said, has always been sort of light and dry. So mm-hmm. the idea of what was being produced in California. It wasn't because that they didn't know how to make rosé. Right. It was just happened to be the wine that was popular at the time. And maybe it was more suited to the American palate, which was a little bit on more on the sweet side. But mm-hmm. I think those days are over. I think especially the new generation, the millennials, are not looking for sweet rosé. They want dry and pale.
Absolutely. And it's funny because I do a series at a local country club here for the past 6 years during season. We do a monthly wine tasting event. And I knew that rosé had pretty much arrived when at our first wine tasting back in November, one of the ladies came up to me and was like, Stephanie, we need to do a rosé class here. And that's when I knew, like, everybody is in on rosé now. And you brought up a good point a minute ago, because I think people might think, like, rosé is a kind of a newer thing, but they've been making, rosé in Provence has been made for, hundreds
of years.
Right?
For sure.
Yeah.
And I think what has changed, though, is the technology, because, when I was a kid growing up in France, right. It was funny. My father used to drink a rosé called Tavel, and Tavel was actually a little bit darker from the Rhone Valley. Mm-hmm. Provence wasn't really that popular. It was essentially a sort of summertime, we call sort of cheap and cheerful. So everybody mm-hmm. in France would, in the month of August, we'd close down. They'd jump in their car and go to the south of France on vacation, and they would go to the local winery or the cooperative and fill up their, we call a QB, which is kind of a big jug of mm-hmm. rosé, and it probably cost, 7 or 10 francs, and you drink it down and maybe put some ice cubes in it. Mm-hmm. And it was sort of okay. It wasn't good, wasn't bad. But there was no investment, no technology, and that radically changed. One of the, I think the things which, Sacha Lachine at Chateau d'Esclon brought to Provence was this investment in technology, and his thought behind it with Patrick Leon, the winemaker, was mm-hmm. Why can't we make great rosé? Why does rosé have to be something cheap out of a jug? And I think they've proved that it can be done, and then it really opened people's eyes to, wow, rosé is a real wine, not just something pink.
Absolutely. And I think I'm glad you bring that up, because that's something that you guys are pretty much single-handedly, I think, responsible for. I call it the paradigm shift from rosé as, right, like a cheap and cheerful, more everyday wine, to now not only Whispering Angel, but you have the Rock Angel, the Lake Clan, and Garousse, and which is so exciting. Like, these wines are not only they're more expensive, they're also age worthy too. Can you tell us all a little bit more about how you got involved in that process, and maybe, because here you've known rosé since you're a kid or a younger guy.
And No, for sure.
Yeah. What you thought about when you first heard what he was trying to do with it?
Well, I'll be honest, as I was living in Bordeaux, I knew Sacha from his father, and then when his father passed away, Sacha was running a chateau in Margaux called Prairie Lichine. So I knew Sacha from there, and of course he, right. as the story goes, left Bordeaux and invested in Provence, and everybody thought it was a little crazy, especially people from Bordeaux, yeah. With this idea of making great rosé. So when we reconnected, and he said, well, we're like to introduce this to America, we all started scratching our heads, and we said, well, how are we going to do it? And so the strategy was quite simple. It was sort of a town hall approach. So we mm-hmm. started traveling around America, and we started in the spots that we had some chance of selling rosé, which essentially were the Hamptons. Again, remember, this mm-hmm. is 10 or 12 years ago, Nantucket, a little bit in Miami, and those sort of places. And we started educating and teaching about rosé by doing tastings and public speaking. Mm-hmm. And we would invite people to taste the Whispering Angel. Everybody said, well, that's a strange name. And then we tasted them on the other wines from the property, which were actually barrel fermented. And they said, well, that doesn't taste like rosé. And Sasha being a little bit flamboyant, he said, well, who are you to tell me what rosé should taste like?
Exactly. Love it. That sounds like him. And right, for those of you listening who might not be that familiar with Bordeaux, Sasha's father, Alexis, was a legend in Bordeaux for producing these, beautiful red wines. So for him to not really follow in his dad's footsteps in that respect, but then to kind of do something very different and go to Provence and to start not only making rosé, but really changing the game. when it came to rosé. And can you tell us a little bit about the Les Clans and the Garus and how they're different than Whispering Angel?
Okay. Yeah, I think it's actually a very good question. I think it's safe to say that rosé lovers in America, not just in America, remember Whispering Angel and Chateau d'Espoir are sold in 110 countries. The places that you would, all the destinations, whether in Saint-Tropez or these days or Greece or Croatia or et cetera, Tulum and St. Bart's, you would find these rosés. But the idea was from this property, Chateau d'Espoir, and today all of the rosés are still made at Chateau d'Espoir. They're not produced at a factory or anything like that. The idea was using basically Grenache as the core grape, the majority being Grenache, a little bit of Roll, which is Vermentino, in the blend, and then creating four different styles. So Whispering Angel being the lightest of the four, mm-hmm. essentially clean, fruit forward, stainless steel, that style of wine. And then from the hills behind the chateau, using some of the single vineyards to do what I would call batch barrel fermented rosés, which almost in some cases, like Les Clans and Garus, remind us of white Burgundy. If you close your eyes, you might imagine you're in the hillsides of somewhere between Meursault and Chassagne-Montrachet versus Provence.
Absolutely. Yeah, beautiful wines. Blown away when I first tasted those wines initially back in the day. And you guys have really given it, another reason why I am drawn to these wines is giving them a glamorous kind of edge. In addition to the entry level, right, to have the Les Clans and then the Garus, which is the, you know, your most expensive offering. But again, I'm actually doing a tasting later today with some of the older vintages of the Les Clans and the Garus. And it's amazing how well they hold up. They're beautiful. Yeah. I mean, they evolve into such beautiful.
No, they do. They do. They do age very well. They're certainly food friendly because they're a little bit richer and I wouldn't say heavier, but they have more body. So they hold up to richer types of cuisine. It's interesting. The way I'm seeing the rosé category, not just in the US, but around the world, is you're right. It's about lifestyle. So where the folks are on vacation or a holiday or just in general, people are, I think, curious, traveling to these destinations. And that's what rosé has become. I would even dare to say in certain places, rosé is the new champagne.
Mm-hmm. Well said. Yeah, very, very true. And I know I love your job in this. So you get to go to the most glamorous, amazing places. And right, I remember the first events we did together at the Museum of Art Fort Lauderdale when I was doing those events. Right, the lifestyle of Saint-Tropez. And it wasn't just bringing a wine to people. You were really introducing them to this, you know, very wonderful, luxurious lifestyle that they could participate in by, you know, enjoying these exceptional wines.
Yes. And I think rosé is unique for that because, of course, you drink it chilled. And because you drink it chilled, it tends to lead itself towards a lot of these, I would say, outdoor or certainly warmer weather, not just warm weather, but a lot of it is warm weather. So all of a sudden you end up on somebody's yacht or you're watching polo, drinking rosé, or you're at some sort of music festival like Coachella. Mm-hmm. And so it's quite unusual. And then more recently, we've taken it to the ski slopes. So now in Aspen and Vail, we're doing during spring break, we're doing pink snow parties and people are drinking rosé and après ski.
I'm telling you guys, Paul has the most amazing ideas for all of this. And I know. And so you just celebrated the 10th anniversary of the brand.
Well, yes, the 10th anniversary was the past year. So we're into now the 12th vintage, how time flies. And we're still really enjoying this and having fun. I just wish that we could produce more Whispering Angel, which unfortunately we can't, just limited because of where it's produced and how it's produced, because we really cannot make enough Whispering Angel to keep up with the demand.
Right. So I know, like, what was it? Was it last year or the year before there was a rosé shortage in the Hamptons? Or a rosé shortage?
We had a little bit to do with that.
Yes, I know you did. And I know people just want your wine. So is there anything new on the horizon with Chateau?
Yes, actually, perfect timing. So we will be releasing, as we speak, a new rosé from Whispering Angel. And The reason behind it is, you know, we've been talking about Provence, and really for us, we believe Provence is the birthplace of rosé, and there's a reason why, because of Grenache and all the things which I've said, being dry, light, and pale. But as I said, because of the limited supply of Whispering Angel, you know, the category has changed so much in the past, not even 10 years, I would say the last four or five. And in America, whereas before maybe there were perhaps a dozen rosés available, in the last couple of years, now there's over 250. Some are quite good, and but some are a little confusing. I wouldn't want to see, you know, the American consumer be misled and go back to sort of, you know, sweet sort of colored water styles of rosé. Right. A lot of them are more supermarket generic, but even so. So we decided to create from Whispering Angel this new wine, which is going to be called The Palm. P-A-L-M, like a palm leaf, but it's The Palm by Whispering Angel. It's actually signed by Whispering Angel, and it's authentic, being from Provence. Mm-hmm. It's not from Château d'Escalon. We went to the extreme west side of Provence, to a town called Aix, A-I-X, yes. And Aix has an appellation, which is Coteau d'Aix, which we're able to source our rosé there. So it's a limited production, but we wanted to do something a little different to Whispering Angel. So let's say you've been enjoying Whispering Angel for the last, you know, 8 or 10 or 12 years. Mm-hmm. I think you pretty much understand what rosé is. This is really geared towards the newer consumer, millennials for sure, maybe gotcha. A little younger, who are just starting out. Remember, let's say hypothetically this is your first or second rosé and you want to learn. Mm-hmm. That's what The Palm by Whispering Angel is about. It's to teach this new generation what true rosé can be. And dry, light. It's a little bit more fruity, perhaps, mm-hmm. than Whispering Angel, okay. but it's definitely dry. So we kicked it off in New York not too long ago, about 3 weeks, for over 200 press and rosé lovers in New York City, New York being mm-hmm. the largest market in America for rosé. What I said at the end of my speech was, life is too short to drink fraudulent rosé.
I love it. Life's too short to drink fraudulent rosé. I love that. That's going to be our mantra this month.
So, and you can trust Whispering Angel to give you the real deal.
The real deal. That's so very important. So if people wanted to look for the Palm in their region, I mean, because it's going to be mostly in restaurants, you said, correct?
Correct. In year one, we started because you just don't jump in. We wanted to make sure it was very well made, and which it is. So year one is essentially on-premise restaurants and fine hotels. We'll be doing some series of events. So if you're in the Hamptons, you'll find it in Montauk, places like mm-hmm. Surf Lodge. And then in Miami this summer, we have an interesting partnership with the Fontainebleau. So it will be great. at the pool at the Fontainebleau. Wonderful. Because it's got kind of wine. It's a very approachable. It has a screw cap versus a cork finish, and just very sort of easy drinking. You don't need a Riedel fancy glass. You can drink out of a plastic cup, or gotcha. In our case, a paper cup, because we want to keep plastic out of the ocean, and just enjoy. And that's what this is about. And to continue to educate. I think Château d'Escalon, we have a vocation to educate America about true rosé.
Yes, and I think you have done an amazing job at that. You really have. I mean, look where we are 10 years later, and everybody knows about it. And your wines make it easy for someone like me, who does a lot of tastings. And I still get some pushback at times about, pink wine. I'm telling you, the minute they taste the wine, it's gratifying for me to just watch the reaction come over someone's face, like, wow, that's what rosé is. Because, you know, there still is lingering this idea of, oh, that wine is going to be sweet and syrupy, and, you know, and I don't like that. But right, these wines are crisp and refreshing and delicious, and your wines make it so easy to to introduce people to rosé and to get them embracing it on a daily basis, hopefully, but especially here in Florida, where we can drink it pretty much year round because of our weather.
No, for sure. And again, if you look at the, again, total wine category in America, the vast majority of consumption is still red, not just in America, everywhere in the world. Yeah. And then the rest would be sort of a mixture of whites and champagne. So rosé is less than 5% of consumption. So this is only going to grow. There's, as I said, the only challenge is there's probably not enough rosé to keep everybody happy.
Exactly. And that was my next question. What does the future hold? I mean, it's pretty much just going to continue growing and growing. Yes.
Yeah. And again, the market leader still is Provence. I think what's going to happen though, and something we've sort of scratching our head about is I believe that if, you know, everybody puts their mind to it, I think you're going to start to see some interesting styles of rosé come out of California, and it's not going to be blush anymore. It'll mm-hmm. be true, proper rosés, and they certainly have the climate in certain places to do it. Mm-hmm. So why not? And I think I think that's what's going to you'll see, but not the generic commercial types of wines. I mean proper estate rosé, and I think that would certainly make us happy. To see that happen, and as the category increases, there's plenty of room for any sort of top quality producer to join in on this rosé revolution.
Yes, that's exactly what it is, the rosé revolution. I love it. Yes, and I've been happy to see that too. Some nice quality rosé wines coming from California, right? And you are definitely seeing that more and more. People are really following your lead on that, and that's a really wonderful thing to see.
Excellent. As we is a joke, as we say in France, but certainly in America, you know, our theme is rosé all day.
Amen. That is one of my favorite hashtags. And yes, and I'm featuring every day for the month of May on Instagram, #31 days of rosé. And I definitely look forward to featuring yours there. And is there also, I wanted to just tie back, anywhere in Palm Beach County where people might be able to look for the Palm yet? Just because that's where we are.
Ooh, not quite yet, but it will be released in the next, let's say the next couple of months.
All right, I got to look out for my peeps here that way. So we'll work on that. And because you and we haven't done an event in a little while, and we've got to come up with a way to celebrate the 10th anniversary here. So
long overdue. We need to have a little rosé party.
Definitely. So I very much look forward to that. And we covered a lot of ground today. I think some of the most important things are, you know, all rosé is not created equal. You definitely want to look for those examples. If not from Provence, you want to look for ideally from Provence, which is our birthplace of rosé, but those dry examples, the crisp, refreshing examples, not the syrupy sweet ones that, you know, that aren't what rosé really, really is about. And I think we learned a little bit more about your brand and how far you've come. And we're all going to be looking for your new wine, you know, in the coming year or so. And and I will be sure to let everyone listening know when we have a date picked out to do a little rosé party, hopefully here in the next, I don't know, couple weeks, who knows, but we'll get together on that. So thanks so much
Excellent.
For joining me today, Paul. I know you're super busy and on your way to the airport. So
again,
I appreciate you taking the time to talk to me.
So as I said, looking forward to it. And if you do happen to be visiting in the south of France, please come and visit us at Chateau d'Esclon, because you just might hear the angels whisper.
Oh, I love that. And I'm so glad you brought that up. We visited a couple of years ago. One of just such a beautiful, beautiful place in the world. You definitely want to go. I will link up our visit in the show notes. And for those of you listening, anything mentioned in today's show, I'm going to link up in the show notes, which you can find at theglamorousgourmet.com/episode11. So thanks again, Paul. I really appreciate it.
And we will see you soon. A bientôt.
Looking forward to it. Thank you so much.
Okay. Bye-bye.